360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
Joining me in the studio right now for The Week That Was, proudly brought to you by De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers, and now also broadcasting on 8HA from midday. We've got the opposition leader, Leah Finocchiaro. Good morning.
Happy Friday.
Oh, how good's the weather?
Oh, it's ridiculously cold. My daughter and I, when I dropped her off this morning, she said, "Mummy, I think I need a jumper." So it's great.
Well, and we hardly even own those. And then yes. We've also got Natasha Files, the Health Minister. Good morning to you.
Morning. And a little funny anecdote. Yesterday morning, I walked out and my younger son looked at me and was like, "What is that?" And I was just wearing a jumper.
Because they don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
Well, if you're thinking we're light on this morning, we were due to have Matt Cunningham in the studio as well, but he's out at a press conference. But I don't think that we're going to have any issues discussing everything this morning, ladies.
What are you trying to say?
Oh, well, I bet we all speak enough for everyone. Now, there is actually so much to cover off on this week as well. And I do want to start with the ever-moving situation that is COVID-19. We started the week with the good announcement that the vaccine is now open to everybody over the age of 16. Leah, you went and got
yes.
your vaccine.
I was so excited when the government opened this up. It was long overdue. You know, we really need to get as many people tested as possible. So the earliest appointment I could get was yesterday. I stumped up and it hurt a lot less than the flu shot. And I just really encourage everyone, make those bookings. They're already filling up. I mean, I know some people have to wait a couple of weeks now, but find a spot, lock it in, just get it done.
Yeah, I can't get in till July 1. Now,
yeah, well, there
so
you go.
There you go. A bit of a
snooze you lose, Katie.
I know. And wouldn't you, as luck would have it, I was probably we were the first ones here on Mix to find out it was happening.
It.
And I still wasn't fast enough to book in.
Katie, it's really important. And we thank the Commonwealth Government. The Northern Territory has a unique situation. And we had seen that there was no phases outside of Darwin. But, you know, Darwin is a key service centre for the whole territory. People are very transient. Talking to some of the health practitioners, they'd been encouraging people to get vaccinated. But, you know, might be from a remote community but have a Darwin address. So over 60,000 vaccinations have been delivered in the territory. We do ask for a little bit of patience, but it's super easy. Just head to the coronavirus website and you can make an online booking. You just choose your preferred location and it gives you the next available appointment. So we do, you know, people do need to be patient, but just make the booking now while you're a member and in a few weeks' time it'll be available.
And I had mine at the Palmerston Super Clinic, so you can just ring them and get that done there as well.
Yeah, and look, I think that like we all agree, this is a good thing. I think that the fact that it's now open to everybody over the age of 16, hopefully, what it sees is some of that vaccine hesitancy that we've seen around the place, all around Australia, and I'm sure around the world, that start to subside to some degree as more and more people that all of us know start to go out and get their vaccine and don't have side effects.
I was going to say that there's still a significant issue in remote communities, though, and I know I was out a couple of weeks ago, and the vaccination rate in some communities is incredibly low. People are very, very nervous, obviously, with the scare around AstraZeneca, and even though remote communities are being offered Pfizer, not enough is being done to get people on board and allay their fears and really work with communities around what their concerns are and how to build confidence going forward. So that really has to be a focus of the Territory Government, and I appreciate they did some advance work, but it clearly wasn't enough, and we need to go back and revisit that to make sure that our most vulnerable are getting the jab.
Well, and look, from a very good announcement, obviously, on Monday with everybody over the age of 16 now being eligible, to something that continues to rear its head as a concern, and that is the COVID testing out at Howard Springs. Now, there still seems to be a lot of concern about these changes which were implemented at Howard Springs. Earlier in the week, we heard from Kath Hatcher, the branch secretary of the Australian Nursing and Midwifery Federation. She was calling for the use of the PCR saliva tests happening daily to be halted and the recommencement of the rapid antigen test, that nasal swab, at Howard Springs. Now, we then caught up with Kath following on from a meeting that she'd had with the Chief Health Officer firstly, and then she'd also had one with you, Filesy. And my understanding, the outcome from those meetings was that those who wanted to be able to have the nasal swab, as of close of business today, would be able to do so. Is that the case?
So, Katie, there was two separate meetings. The Acting Chief Health Officer, Charles Payne, met with the Nursing and Midwifery Federation. And then I had a meeting following that. And they were very pleased with the meeting that they'd had with Dr. Payne. They'd agreed to share their research evidence. And this is a tricky situation, Katie, because you've got two people that have clinical backgrounds. You very much respect their views and the research that they've done. The Chief Health Officer, this decision isn't just something that he's also researched and come up with. He has been talking to his state and territory counterparts at AHPPC around this. But what has happened, Katie, that I can say is that they've agreed to continue working together, looking at that evidence. I'm not sure that they had gone to the point of allowing those tests to take place if people wished, but we certainly take on board the views of the Federation and we're continuing to work through this.
That's very different to what Kath had said on the show to me earlier in the week, because she had said, I had literally asked her, when do you anticipate that the rapid antigen nasal swabs will be at Howard Springs for those staff who wish to use it? And she said close of business today.
So, Katie, that wasn't in my meeting and I wasn't at that other meeting, but what I can assure people is that they're working collaboratively, looking at the evidence around this and also understanding that these professionals, our nurses and those, go into these workplaces that are very high risk, and even though there might be clinical evidence that what helps them feel comfortable in going to their job and then going home each day, we need to take that on board as well. But what I can confirm and assure Territorians is right now we've got these two professionals working together collaboratively to come up with a resolution.
But there will not be those rapid antigen tests as of close of business today.
I cannot confirm in terms of what may or may not come out of that, but what I can say is that they're working collaboratively.
But I don't understand this. Natasha, you're the health minister. The buck stops with you. You make the calls. You know, you get the advice from your department, as every minister does, but ultimately it rests with government. If this is something that you see as being an important process, which it is, I mean, the fact that you can get a result within 15 minutes and then send staff home back out into the community is critically important. AusMat, were you using it perfectly? That's why we had the gold standard, and now all of a sudden that's gone. I mean, as a health minister, you know, that's a decision for you to make, and I just can't understand why it's not being made, why it's being devolved out to the department.
Well, it's not that it's being devolved out. We listen to the clinical professionals. So unlike yourself, who would have opened our borders back in June last year and put our community at risk, I won't do that. I will listen to the professionals.
I never get tired of hearing that. Neither do the listeners.
We've got a skull out coffee every time Farsi says it.
We need to have a shot or something ready for that. That's it.
You know, we have to listen to the chief health officer. It is our chief health officers that have kept us safe to date, and we're listening to them. As the virus changes, newer evidence emerges, we need to be agile in our response to that.
I think everybody understands that. But at this point in time, the thing that is very clear to me is that, you know, the Nurses Union have come out very strongly saying that they do want those rapid antigen nasal swabs. Now, again, I'll repeat that my understanding was, after speaking to Kath Hatcher earlier in the week, that they left that meeting thinking that there would be the option to have those nasal swabs by close of business Friday. Can I just get a yes or no? Will they be there close of business today?
I can't give you that answer, Katie, because this is a decision between our Chief Health Officer and the Nursing Federation. But what I can say is that the testing regime that is put in place at Howard Springs is a direction of the Chief Health Officer. He believes that right now we have improved on our system, we have the best available system, and so we need to make sure that we continue to listen to that clinical advice in the decisions we make.
I think that's rubbish, because ultimately, as a minister and as a government, you have to take into a lot more considerations than other people within your agency. So the Chief Health Officer is looking at it from a pure health perspective. You also have to look at things from a community confidence perspective, from a perspective of that the staff are confident, comfortable and happy to be out at that facility. And so whilst, you know, we absolutely support the epidemiologists and the nurses union and the fact that AusMat had this test, we absolutely believe it's critical. I mean, other jurisdictions want to do it. But even if nothing else, Natasha, as the health minister, why not reinstate it so that you also reinstate community confidence in what's going on at Howard Springs?
After I spoke to Kath, I thought to myself, that seems like a common sense thing to do. Like, if there is some staff out there who are thinking, look, I'm really concerned about this, I would like to be able to do the nasal swab as I'm leaving each day, why not provide that option?
And I'm not saying that won't happen. What I'm saying is that the Chief Health Officer and the Nursing and Midwifery Federation Federation are coming together, they're working collaboratively, and they'll come up with the conclusion to this.
All right, let's move on, but still continue in this COVID space, because we know that the borders, NT police have now been sent to Queensland Territory, that border, with two COVID cases being detected on the Sunshine Coast earlier in the week. Now, in a statement released on Thursday morning, the police announced that a COVID control point has been re-established on the Barkly Highway. I know that this is something that the opposition has been calling for quite some time, particularly with the case or the situation in Victoria last week, it was.
That's right. And of course, we've had Victorians come from Victoria, go through the Northern Territory and get stopped at the WA checkpoint. We can't understand why the government hasn't had anyone on our borders. Now, we completely appreciate our police are overstretched, overworked, and that crime is out of control. So don't have police on our borders. That's not an issue for us. But to go from a position where for a year we've had police at our borders to a situation where we've had nothing just is doesn't pass the pub test. You know, we could have had public health officials or any number of other public servants out there ensuring that people who come across know what their obligations are. And I've certainly heard stories where people, they just drove through and didn't realise until a later point. So now, of course, we've seen this snap different reaction again where we've got police back on Queensland borders. It just seems like decision making around COVID at the moment is really ad hoc, and it's changed significantly from what it used to be.
Well, quick, scull your coffee, ladies, because on June 22nd, Leah would have had no measures in place.
I must say, though, yesterday morning it was all quite interesting the way in which this information came out, because Michael Gunner, the Chief Minister, appeared on Hot 100 and our sister station and made this announcement quite early. Take a listen.
We've now put our road border up too, by the way, between Queensland and the Territory. Now, this has happened. We've gone and established a road border. Before that, we were relying on the Queensland road border and our automatic number plate recognition and the police work that they do, Operation Crown. They crack down anyone who's coming across the border without doing the correct paperwork. Now we're actually going to put up a hard border on the Queensland border.
So, Katie, just explain that further to your listeners. When this is a decision of the Territory Controller, the Police Commissioner, and so he deploys police resources where he believes they're best fit. We have the automatic number plate recognition on all our borders, and whilst you had cases in Victoria, you had a buffer between South Australia and Queensland. He's indicated that because we've now got cases in Queensland, he wants to have officers stationed on that Queensland border to make an extra layer of protection. So it is a decision of the Territory Controller who overarches all of these decisions because we are in that emergency situation, and he's believed that because there is cases in Queensland, he should provide that additional resource.
Did you know that announcement was happening yesterday morning?
So in terms of the information, it came through late Wednesday. So the Chief Health Officer participated in HPPC on Wednesday, and later on in the day it became evident it was first one case and then the second case, and so that was when decisions were made quickly to put those measures in place.
Look, this is really a strange one because, again, we've got the government not taking responsibility, not making the decisions. It's all these other people who make these decisions. And ultimately, if this number plate recognition was so effective, how the hell did people get through to Western Australia without being picked up? I mean, I just don't understand how all of a sudden number plate recognition is like the panacea to border protection when we've always had cops stationed on our borders for a year. I mean, this changing in decision making is just undermining confidence. And again, I don't think Territorians accept you as a government just saying, oh, well, that's the police commissioner's decision, or well, that's the health officer's decision. You are the ones elected to be the government making the decisions.
A couple of questions I've got on those borders. So have we got police on that border right now?
My understanding is yes, on the Barkly border into Queensland, there is physical police presence.
And how long will they be on that border?
So we need to see what's happening in Queensland. Clearly, we have got cases there. Those people have been infectious in the community. Their Chief Health Officer believes they're coming to the end of their illness, so they're not sure what impact that will have. But we've seen thousands of people turn out in Queensland for testing. So we'll be watching that very closely. And the decision will be made by the Territory Controller when he believes it's safe to remove them.
Well, what about the Plenty Highway? I mean, that comes in from Queensland. And when I was out there 2 weeks ago, the stream of caravans coming across was incredible for a dirt highway. It really was something to see. So, you know, do we have number plate recognition out there? Do we have cops on the borders out there?
So anyone entering the Northern Territory needs to fill in that border form. My understanding is that there is number plate recognition on the roads into the Territory, and the Territory Controller will deploy those police resources where he believes they're needed.
Okay. One of the other changes that came into play throughout the week is the fact that NT Health had announced that they've commenced a COVID-19 wastewater testing system across 10 top-end locations as a further surveillance system to complement existing pathology-based COVID-19 testing for individuals. Falsey, this is something that we've asked you about on numerous occasions. Take a listen to when we asked you about this a few months ago. Should we be testing the wastewater like they do down south?
That has been discussed at a national level around doing wastewater testing. And certainly in terms of areas that have got community transmission, the evidence says that they should be doing that. It's something that we certainly would consider if we were to see cases. We need to understand why would we be doing the wastewater testing and what is it aiming to achieve.
So, taking that into account, why are we doing the testing and what is it aiming to achieve?
So, we're now participating in a national trial of wastewater testing. We've got 10 sampling sites across the top end. We've been able to isolate Stowe Road in Howard Springs, so we will expect to have positive cases there because that's the Howard Springs quarantine facility. We mustn't become alarmed if we do see detection of the virus in the wastewater testing in other areas.
Are you worried you're going to see?
Well, I think that we will see it because people shed the virus for quite a period of time. So someone could have had the virus many months ago and still be shedding that the residual.
But and surely so, that would be like a really low level if
correct,
that was the case.
And that's, correct. And that's why our clinicians will interpret that. And it's at a point where they... So in Sydney, for example, they've notified some suburbs today in the northwest that they feel that there's levels of the COVID being picked up, that there may be activity in those areas. So this is part of a national study and should the detection of fragments be picked up, they'll look at those geographical locations and they, you know, may request that the community in that area get tested and really focus on that. So that's what this is about.
I'm really glad the Gunner government are finally doing this. It's something people have been talking about for a really long time. Of course, we've been watching interstate jurisdictions do this, and so now for us to be doing it, just really conscious, of course, we've got Alice Springs listeners, and yeah. Alice Springs is a great place, and that's not one of the trial sites, which I think will be really disappointing to people in Central Australia, particularly given their proximity to vulnerable populations.
Any you know, moves to actually do something in Alice too?
More than happy to go away and ask Health to work with Parramatta and see if that's possible. I think that as we shift through the coronavirus pandemic, we see more people vaccinated and hopefully we see less restrictions in place around hotspot declarations. This will be an important tool for us to pick up any detection of the virus early. So more than happy to ask them to look at other locations.
Now, look, there's quite a few messages coming through from listeners this morning. I do just want to take you to a couple, though, about testing. There's one here from Joe, and it says, "Morning, Katie. How do you improve on a gold star system? Why change it if it's not broken?"
So it's as we learn more about the virus, they believe that the testing regime, we've got the ability to turn those tests around quickly and that is a better system. But as I said, the Nurses Federation, who we very much respect, remembering that Kath and her colleagues are nurses, they're clinical professionals, but we also need to respect our Chief Health Officer. So they're working together
on
a solution.
But I guess that's where the real concern is here, is if you've got health professionals that are worried and that are, you know, essentially earlier in the week, looking at what action they're going to take. I know that Kath is going to be surveying her members over the next couple of days. You know, what's the government going to do if you literally have those nurses and health professionals that are surveyed say, we don't want to go to work if this isn't happening?
And that's why the Nurses Federation is working with our Chief Health Officer, and that's why they're sharing their evidence so that we can have confidence and people understand what is in place and why there was a change.
OK, I've got another message here, this one from Marianne in Virginia, and it says, "We crossed the Queensland NT border Wednesday AM. Nothing checking on us, either from Queensland or the NT side. Crossed the WA border a couple of weeks ago. Police on WA, very helpful. Nothing from the NT side. Didn't see any evidence of number plate recognition on the Queensland NT border either."
So, Katie, in terms of those measures, Wednesday evening, Thursday morning, is my understanding that the Territory Controller deployed those police resources.
360's The Week That Was, thanks to De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers.
You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is The Week That Was. And in the studio with us this morning, we've got the opposition leader, Leah Fenocchiaro, and the Health Minister, Natasha Files. Now, I do want to talk about the situation that we saw unfold earlier in the week, and that was a crime spree spanning the Darwin suburbs. We know now that Northern Territory Police have arrested and charged one youth and three men in relation to that crime series that took place earlier this week around Darwin. Strikeforce Trident, detectives from Strikeforce Trident and Serious Crime, arrested a 17-year-old, 18-year-old and 19-year-old male earlier in the week, and another 18-year-old male was arrested yesterday. We know that that this situation saw, we spoke to Rihanna yesterday. She had her car stolen. It was then used in a number of those incidents, and pretty frightening stuff. You know, we were talking about home invasions in some instances where people were still at home. And then, you know, cars stolen, taxi drivers allegedly assaulted. It is a real worry. Now then, yesterday on the show, we were absolutely inundated with phone calls because there was a crash on Bagot Road. So essentially that crash on Bagot Road happened just near the school there. The traffic was at a standstill. But then we learned that that car, one of those cars, was allegedly stolen, with the occupants now understood to be in custody. But yeah, it is certainly pretty concerning stuff, particularly when you consider that that literally happened at about 11 o'clock yesterday morning.
Yep, and we're starting to see this more and more. Of course, a few weeks ago, we saw the 15-year-old drive the stolen car from the 8-month pregnant woman straight through the pane glass window at the Zagoli celebrations. And we're seeing this over and over again. It's becoming a common story. And again, it comes back to our law and order framework. We've got police under tremendous pressure, completely overstretched. We've got a government that won't come to terms with dealing with these issues. I mean, I'd really love to see, and no one's given it to me, but I'd love to see how the new bail laws are working. Are people who are on bail still offending? And if they are still offending, are they still being bailed? We certainly think that they are. I mean, the government's ringleader legislation, this 17-year-old with an 18-year-old and 19-year-old he was with, charged under the new ringleader legislation. I think the government just can't get a grip on this issue, or they just don't want to get a grip on this issue.
I want to read you out a message that I received yesterday from Darren in Stewart Park. Now, it said, "Hi, Katie. The justice system sucks. There were two youths in my pool yesterday at Stewart Park trespassing, both wearing tracker ankle bracelets. I wanted to approach them myself, but I know I'd get in trouble. I called the police. They came and took the stolen bikes stolen bikes from them and let them go. We've got a huge youth crime problem in Darwin at the moment, and the Gunner government aren't taking it seriously," says Darren in Stewart Park.
Yep. Because what are our police supposed to do with the laws they've got to operate within? And I think this is the huge breakdown between the government, the community and the police. And we've seen that through satisfaction surveys where 80-90% of police said they don't support the chief minister or the government. The community are just pulling their hair out. They feel like nothing they say matters anymore. They're completely disenfranchised about this whole issue because, you know, we were promised this toughest ever reform last sitting. And what we got was watered down bail garbage. Well, you know, it's just not right.
You know, like, just even listening to that message, right? Like, so you go, if you're talking about two youths that have got electronic monitoring bracelets on, surely it is a breach of your bail if you've allegedly stolen bikes, you've trespassed into somebody's home as well. Like, I just sort of, you know, when you go, it just doesn't make
sense. Right? But you know what? Maybe that wasn't, quote unquote, a serious breach of bail. And so they still have a presumption in favour of bail, and they would have rocked back up to court if they went to court at all, and probably got spat back out the system on the street to do it all again the next night. And that is the fundamental problem. And of course, you know, the suite of reform government promised last sittings was just absolute watered down garbage. And we're certainly going to be asking a lot of questions in estimates over the next 2 weeks about how effective that reform has been.
So, Katie, I can't talk to the specifics of that. I don't understand the circumstances of that. And police, we trust them to do the job, you know, that they should do on that. And so that, you know, would be a matter that's probably ongoing investigation. But as a government, we've invested more into community safety. We've provided more resources to police, more CCTV, more police on the beat, more training. We're investing in this space, but we've also got to deal with these issues before they begin. But it is a complex space that our community's
in. So if we've got more money going into this system, if we're doing more, if we've got more police, why is it still the problem that it is? And why do you think that we're... You know, to a lot of people, particularly those who were broken into as part of that Darwin crime spree earlier in the week, or those that were caught up, you know, in that traffic jam yesterday, they'd be thinking to themselves, well, it's not working.
crime at any time, any crime, no matter how minor or how severe, is unacceptable and our community shouldn't have to put up with it. But for us, we're providing those resources to police and a multifaceted approach so that they can tackle these issues.
I mean, you know, the police put out a media release on this crime spree and said that that 17-year-old that was arrested was charged with 5 counts of breaching bail. I mean, I think that's where people just go,
yeah, what's going on? How is that even possible?
Like, why are we giving people endless chances at bail? Bail is you're like, okay, you've done the wrong thing. Now's your chance. Behave yourself.
Well, it's sort of like, but
5 times? Like, seriously?
Yeah, I mean, I know as a parent, like, I think to myself, if I give my child 5 chances when they've done something really wrong, they're not going to take it seriously.
It doesn't send a message. Doesn't send them a message.
I don't know exactly what the answers are, but I feel like we've been banging on about this for such a long period of time. I know even in Alice Springs, you know, it feels as though things have quietened down to some degree in Alice Springs, but they're not really. You know, you're still getting pretty serious press releases come through each and every day or every second day, let's say, about things happening in the Alice.
Yeah, and the problem is it's all well and good. Like, no one just wants to just walk around locking up kids. We totally get that. But ultimately, if you have a youth who is a repeat offender, i.e. 5 breaches of bail condition and going on to commit more offences whilst on bail, the government has a decision to make. Do we protect the offender and allow them 3 million opportunities to get their life back on track, or do we protect the people that they then go on and victimise? And that's just how brutally honest it has to be. It's like we have to protect one or the other. Seemingly, we can't do both at the same time. So if you're going to snub your nose at all the chances to change your life and you keep offending, really, you have to go to jail, because otherwise there will be 1, 2, 3, 10 more victims as a result of not dealing with the offender.
Katie, these are complex areas and you can't look at it simplistically. Victims, we need to support them. We need to make sure crime stops before it happens. But equally, we do need to provide those resources into our police system, our justice system, and that's what we're doing.
Well, and you know what? If we find that in a couple of months' time this isn't working, maybe we need to put $18 million like we have in the youth justice system into victims of crime so people can board up their premises and make sure that they've got roller doors and things everywhere.
And that is what's happening, you know? Like, people are purchasing roller doors. I mean, the roller door industry and the glass industry must be having a wonderful time. You know, it's just a shame. And why do we have to do that? You know, we're trying to attract tourists. We're trying to say, come to our vibrant tropical cities or our communities right across the territory. You know, in Alice Springs, crime, the number one issue for tourism. You know, this is an all-pervasive issue. It's not just poor Territorians who become the victims. It's the flow-on impact to business and the community. I mean, you know, shops that have been broken into 9, 10 times, the cost of all of those things, it just adds up, and ultimately a lot of people leave because they've had a gutful.
There is a message here from Eddie and it says, "Hi Katie, how many times do we have to hear that one crime's one too many before the government starts acting to protect us?" There's another one here, it says, "Hi Katie, can you please ask why isn't the government doing more to get people back to country? If they don't have business here, why don't they go home?"
Katie, we have put in significant resources working with Larrakia Nation to get people back to country. We have seen, you know, over the last few months an increase, we believe. We've heard that anecdotally from our health services, Larrakia Nation, but we've certainly been putting resources into getting people back to country and making sure that they don't get caught up in Darwin unnecessarily and become a burden here in Darwin.
But it's people a big do issue in right... Karama at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, people have the right to come into any of our urban areas, and they are service centres. I know that public housing's been doing a lot of work in this space, because making sure that it's not just, you know, that it is only the tenants, that people, visitors that somehow end up in our public housing properties as well. So, and that describes the complexity of these issues that our community has.
Yeah, but there's not enough coordination, you know. I mean, and I've been out, I've done a mobile office in Karama, I've gone and stood at the supermarket with security and talked to them about how things are going. You know, you talk to people. I had a mobile office out front of Hibiscus Shops last week, and people were talking to me about territory housing and just the out of control behaviour and antisocial behaviour and crime that's happening in them. And, you know, whenever we raise these issues with government, it's just you get these, you know, wet mop responses like, oh, we're working with the tenant, we're doing this, we're doing that. It's not enough. And in the meantime, everybody else has to suffer. You know, it's not okay. It's just not okay. And I just don't know why you guys don't want to take stronger action to have a stronger, safer safer community, one that everyone can enjoy and get on with their lives.
Katie, some of these issues, they're difficult and they're long-term work, but I will acknowledge the Minister for Urban Housing, Kate Warden. She's been doing a lot of work in this space, making sure that people who have public housing are upholding their tenancy agreements and that they're not causing problems within our community. And so that work certainly is being undertaken. This describes the multifaceted, issues that we face across our community.
Yeah, it does. But look, I think that people have reached a point where they're just going, why have we got a car that's stolen on the road at 11 o'clock in the morning yesterday that's then crashed into an innocent, an innocent person on the road in broad daylight.
Out the front of a school. Scary.
It's too much. It's something's got to change. And I know that the government obviously made these bail changes last month. And it's, we don't know yet how they're going. But I'll be really fascinated to see the information that does come out of estimates next week. I'll be one of the few that's listening intently to find out and let our listeners know what's going on.
360's The Week That Was. Thanks to De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers.
In the studio with us this morning for The Week That Was, Leah Finocchiaro and Natasha Files. And we are also broadcasting on 8HA. Now, I do want to talk about the situation that that we have at the moment at Royal Darwin Hospital. Now, earlier in the week, we revealed on the show that a security guard had been stabbed by a patient at the hospital and that there was a serious bed shortage when it comes to mental health patients. We'd been told over the last couple of weeks that there'd been up to 17 people who had to be accommodated in different parts of the hospital because there was not any room for them in the mental health ward at the hospital. Now, in addition to that, Matt Cunningham from Sky News has done a fairly extensive piece, you'd have to say, which reveals that there have been quite a crisis, I think, with a lack of beds placing extraordinary pressure on the emergency department and forcing doctors to use distressing practices. So a sharp increase in mental health presentations and a lack of appropriate facilities, and workers are creating dangerous environment where the safety of staff, patients and visitors are being put at risk. Whistleblowers have told the Northern Territory News that doctors in the emergency department are being forced to administer massive doses of sedatives to psychiatric patients as there are no mental health beds available for them. Some patients are being intubated, given a general anaesthetic and sent to the intensive care unit on a ventilator because they're too violent to be kept in the emergency department. Mental health patients are sometimes being forced to spend several days in seclusion in the emergency department with no access to daylight or fresh air. Staff in some cases have been forced to let sanctioned or involuntary patients leave the emergency department to avoid violent confrontations. You would have to say that this is really at a crisis point, Filesy.
Mental health, Katie, has been a concern, and it's a multifaceted approach that's needed. So we have put investment into the community response, and we are also putting investment into the acute response. But I will acknowledge that Royal Darwin Hospital, and particularly the emergency department, are under pressure. And so we're working to put in place some shorter term measures. And this work has actually been underway for some time, and we have tried different measures. But this is an issue that we face around the country. In terms of Royal Darwin Hospital, we have the JRU and the CADI units that provide inpatient beds for sectioned patients, but we need to have more assessment in the emergency department. So we're working to provide a safer space for patients and for our staff in that, as well as 18 additional beds. We've put in place the co-responder model, so we're trying to deviate known patients from mental illness from our hospitals to try and provide them those supports in the community setting. We're working with the community providers around more beds. We've put in place the HARSI program, for example, which supports public housing tenants to maintain their tenancy. So this is a difficult issue, and mental health illness, because you can't physically see it, it is a really difficult space. But I think there's been a lot of acknowledgement across the country that it's a very real issue and that governments need to invest in it.
Well, it's an incredibly real issue, and it's acute at this point in time for us here in the Northern Territory. I mean, when we've got a situation early last month where a security guard was stabbed in the hospital, to me, it's at breaking point.
Katie, we have zero tolerance for violence against our staff, and it is extremely disappointing that sometimes people, when they go to hospital, have no respect for our staff. They are making clinical decisions, and it might be that you're in the waiting room first, but someone else might need that medical care quicker. And we have that zero tolerance for aggression. It's something that we have run campaigns here in the Territory. We've run campaigns with our paramedics and right across the country. In terms of mental health, though, it's needed a specific focus, and I believe these additional resources will drive long-term change to provide better care, but also a safer working environment.
I mean, are our staff actually safe in the hospital if, you know, well, we've got security guards having to obviously oversee some of those patients or be there with some of those patients, but then if you wind up in a situation where one of them is stabbed, I mean, are our staff safe here?
They should be safe, and it's everyone's responsibility to make sure they are.
Well, and particularly the government's.
And that is why we have and are investing in this space. But we're also looking at shorter term solutions so that we can try and ease that pressure whilst that infrastructure comes online.
I mean, the stabbing of the security guard is so scary. And the fact that, you know, the government didn't let anyone know about it, this has just come out through leaks, just makes everyone wonder, you know, what other incidents don't we know about? And the fact that that security guard put their life on the line, you know, it really genuinely is heroic. That could have been a nurse or a doctor instead of that security guard. And I think that just highlights the level of control we're having to have in our health facilities and just how risky things have become. And it's not okay. And for the government to sort of sweep under the carpet these types of things just really, again, undermines community confidence in the process and in the system.
I would disagree with the comment sweeping it under the carpet. Katie, this is an issue for me as the Minister for Health that I've tackled head on and that I've acknowledged mental health and the need for more resources, not just in the acute setting, more bed space and more staff, but also stopping people with mental illness from having to enter that acute system, which is the worst place for them, and what resources we can put. So we trialled the co-responder model and that's been very successful. So we will expand that and extend that. We are making sure that we're supporting public housing tenants to maintain their tenancy. We know that homelessness and mental illness go hand in hand, but also making sure that we've got that community space. So there'll be a new adult community space in Casuarina in the coming months, and that will provide support to people to maintain their health so that they don't end up in that acute setting in these situations.
Is it correct, though, that there was, I mean, you'd spoken to me earlier in the week about the need for staff in the emergency ward to be trained in the mental health space and to have a team that can assess those mental health patients as they come in. Is it the case that a locum who was employed or was hired to do that job left really rather quickly because of serious concerns about the way that things are unfolding inside the hospital when it comes to mental health?
So having been out at the hospital each week for the last few weeks, working with the clinicians and listening directly to them, it was identified that if we could put some of those mental health resources straight into ED, it would support them. I can't talk to the individual circumstances of people's positions there, but that is something that we're looking at having that support in the emergency department to support those emergency doctors. So we're also looking, Katie, too, in terms of the hospital, emergency is where most people present, but can we have direct admission for some people into certain areas of the hospital? In terms of mental illness, they need to be assessed for physical injuries.
Yeah, but then if we don't have a bed to take them into, like even if there is a situation where they can have that direct line, if there's no space and nowhere for them to go, and I know that we're obviously, you know, the tenders come out for that facility, but that's going to be a while away. Like how long is that going to take?
And we are going to have beds in the shorter term. We cannot wait until that infrastructure is built. I've absolutely acknowledged that. So we are putting in place some short-term measures to have additional beds. This is an area of growth, Katie, that I think we haven't seen much acknowledgement, but in the recent years from both Commonwealth and state governments, we've had national reports into this. We know that we need to care for these people in a different way, and that's why we're putting these resources right across the spectrum in place.
Well, I think, you know, it's been an obvious issue for a long time that hasn't properly been addressed, and I think the best example of that is the Darwin Private Hospital. You know, they identified the need, they got on with the job, that facility is now built and operational, and the fact that the public system is now playing catch up is, you know, definitely disappointing. It's great the government are now onto it because it's going to obviously make our hospitals safer, but also takes the pressure off police who are also involved in having to deal with these people.
Katie, I don't think we're playing catch up in this space. The private hospital facility is fantastic. We need to have different levels of care for different people, and so the more we have in this space, that is certainly welcomed. But this is an area you've had some national national inquiries recently that have identified how governments across Australia can provide better care to people suffering from mental illness, and we'll continue to work very hard in this space.
360's The Week That Was. Thanks to De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers.
We don't have a huge amount of time left, but still a couple of things that I'm very keen to talk about this morning. And, of course, Leah Fenocchiaro and Natasha Files in the studio with me. Now, the Treaty Commissioner, Mick Dodson, has extended his leave as the NT government is apparently trying to negotiate his resignation. That's what's being reported today in the paper. Professor Dodson's lawyer, David De Silva, said an announcement about his future was imminent and said Mick currently remains on leave while he receives support for a mental health condition. An announcement about his future will be made in the coming days. Leah, you have been very firm on this, that you feel he needs to stand aside.
Oh, absolutely. When you're a commissioner or you hold very high levels of office, you have to be beyond reproach. And these allegations, I think, from three women or three Aboriginal women are simply appalling. You know, the role of Treaty Commissioner is important. The fact that the Minister for Treaty, Selena Yubo, you know, an Aboriginal woman herself, has known about this since March and is absolutely silent on this issue. I mean, she's completely AWOL. We've had the Chief Minister come out and try and get him to resign, which has been ignored, which just shows how much clout the Chief Minister's got in our territory. But yet again, Selena Yubo, where are you? He's your Treaty Commissioner. You know, these are the same group of Labor ministers who marched with women during the March for Justice and, you know, are happy to do publicity around women's rights and stamping out violence against women. But when you actually then have a situation you need to deal with, just completely goes to ground. I mean, it's unacceptable.
Natasha, what's going to happen here?
So the Territory Government strongly condemns the threatening or abusive behaviour of any individual. This is difficult, Katie, because someone is going through an employment matter, but Mr Dodson indicated his willingness to resign, and those arrangements are being finalised. But it is unacceptable, any behaviour, any threats of violence against any individual, let alone a woman.
I mean, what does that even mean, like arrangements to resign? I mean, who even knows what some of this stuff actually means? The opposition's been very clear. If he doesn't stand down before sittings on Friday fortnight, we'll move the motion to the Parliament. It would be then up to the government whether or not they believe he should stay or go. And again, we've had to lead from opposition in the absence of any leadership from Selena Yubo or Michael Gunner.
Will you support that motion?
We haven't ruled out either putting forward our own motion or supporting the opposition's.
Interesting stuff. Go. Now, speaking of interesting, Leah Fenocchiaro, you apparently flew to Sydney for a $1,000 a head Liberal Party fundraiser on Wednesday, the NT News has revealed. Firstly, what was for lunch?
We had steak and chips. It was lovely. I want to say that it was such an... I'm thrilled to have had the opportunity to go. You know, you don't get many opportunities to go into state and spruik the territory and put the territory for its investment opportunities on the map. And I want territorians to understand that this was not a taxpayer-funded trip. I went as parliamentary leader of the Country Liberal Party, and the Country Liberal Party paid for me to go.
It was a fundraiser, though.
24 hours. Yep, for the Liberal Party. So I was very pleased to be asked to be a guest speaker. Of course, I talked about all the things you would expect me to talk about our mining opportunities, our gas opportunities, our agricultural opportunities, that the Territory needs to be and is the best place to invest. And so any chance I get to bang the Territory drum and say, come and spend your money here, come and create jobs, I'll take it any day of the week, Katie.
So Leah, we know that the CLP previously had Foundation 51, and we know that the Hume Foundation is the New South Wales version. So will there be any kickbacks to the CLP?
Me.
Just between me, you and Wolfie, there's only three of us today.
What a smutty, ridiculous thing to say.
It's true. Foundation 51 was the backdoor way of funding CLP election campaigns. So
this was not
just a
secret.
Question, yes or no? Any Hume funding will come into the Territory?
You know, I'm not answering your ridiculous allegations. Because it's just ridiculous.
Will Hume Foundation provide any funding to the CLP?
Well, you will have to ask the Hume Foundation. I am the Country Liberal Party leader, and I went down to spruik the territory, which I wish the Chief Minister would do more of. I mean, ultimately,
to be more than steak and chips. It's a long way to go for just a meal.
Ultimately, we need to have a national profile. We need to be in front of investors and saying to them, come to the territory. It's just so important. And
to go to an exclusive $1,000 a head lunch in a boardroom doesn't seem like being very open and transparent.
Well, I'm being very open and transparent. Absolutely nothing to
Where
hide here.
It?
The
oh,
Country Liberal Party
dream?
Paid for me to go. I went. I sprigged the territory as hard as I possibly could, and I'd
Where
do that any
what
day
boardroom?
Of the week because I'll put the territory first every chance I get, Katie.
We are going to have to wrap up. The opposition leader, Leah Finocchiaro, thank you so much
thank
for your
you.
Time
have
today.
Have a great weekend and Glenty weekend.
Woohoo!
Barunga.
Natasha Files, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And we'll catch you again, in next week,
next
I'm
week.
Sure. Yes. You're listening to Mix 104.9's 360.